You're listening to Cents Per Mile with your host, Charles Gracie, and his co-host, Paul Gibson. Joined by Josh Haynes, they'll be tackling tough industry topics, asking even tougher questions, all to find better solutions as they try to make sense make sense.
Welcome to Cents Per Mile. I'm Charles Gracie, and we're live at Matt's.
I'm Paul Gibson, and they only had one open massage chair. Charles? Charles? Let's just go.
We run a podcast called Cents Per Mile. We like to take the driver perspective and basically show it to carriers, be like, this is what drivers are thinking. You know, being powered by CDL Life, we actually have access to the world's largest driver audience. So we actually ask real drivers instead of, you know, consultants and all of that to find out how they feel. We show it to carriers and then try to help them be better.
And that's a full-time job.
They asked us to speak. And instead of taking our normal approach, talking about the, you know, the normal way we would talk about it, we kind of wanted to go through and explain the situation that everybody is in. And that'll make sense in a bit. This is Charles Gracie. Charles was a veteran, and then he went to culinary school, and he was like, oh, I want to be a cook. I want to be a famous chef. That didn't work out. So, of course, just like his father before him, he went into trucking, and he drove a truck. Drove a truck for a while. Went and flipped to the office side, did some safety stuff, did some operations stuff, and then did some recruiting stuff. And he was like, this is legit. So he started his own third-party recruiting company called Hot Seat Services. And it's actually funny because when we met outside of a conference, and he was like, oh, hey, how's it going? I'm Charles. Oh, I'm Paul. What do you do? He's like, I'm a third-party recruiter. And I use stronger words to say, you're obviously a person of great integrity. Then he explained his story, and his whole concept is to take recruiting and do it in an honest way, which is not something a lot of people think ever happens. But yeah, so that is Charles.
I'm going to introduce you to Paul Gibson. He's the vice president of video production at CDL Life, but he's also my good friend. And Paul and I go back some time, and over the course of knowing Paul, his approach to try to communicate the driver's life cycle in video to help carriers connect with drivers was one of the reasons we first started talking. Everyone has these ads out there and they all look the same. We'll treat you like family. We'll give you great home time and some stock image of a cab over, not even from this decade. Paul connects the dots and tries to help communicate carriers' culture through video to help them reach the right drivers. So through talking and becoming good friends, his integrity, his mission just kind of connected. So it only made sense when we started the podcast that I needed a buffer. I needed HR to get off my back too. So that's Paul.
We've segmented the industry into three parts, and we're going to break down the perspective for all three. First is the driver perspective. So we're going to do a little role play scenario, which would make sense for Charles to be the driver because he's been a driver. But I'm going to be the driver because I haven't even done it, and I can tell how obvious this stuff is. Charles, why don't you give me your pitch?
You know, Paul, I got a great job for you. You're going to drive one of our trucks, you're going to be in a prestigious industry, and you're going to get to travel the world.
The world?
All right, maybe the nation.
All 50?
Yeah, 48.
Yeah, this is not a bridge to Hawaii, man.
Anything's possible. On top of that, I'm going to give you top pay.
Top pay. Oh, yeah? What's that pay?
50 cents a mile.
50 cents a mile.
Yeah, okay. I mean, you're going to make a lot of money and you're going to get to travel.
Well, okay, so 50 cents a mile, right? Or are you going to pick my route for me?
Well, I'm not going to dictate your route, but I am going to tell you where you need to get fuel.
Okay, so you're not going to tell me my route, but you're going to give me checkpoints. Are your trucks governed?
They're really nice trucks, new.
So yes. So since we've established that, can you at least tell me what the speed is?
65 miles an hour.
All right, cool. You guys are ATA members. And so with that, you're going to pay me 50 cents per mile, right?
Okay. Yeah, per mile.
So I've got a job.
Zip code.
You're going to tell me where to go, how to get there, how fast I can get there, but you're going to pay me on my performance that I have no control over.
In a nutshell.
Cool. All right, what do you got? What else you got?
Well, Outside of that, we're going to treat you like family.
That's a great benefit. It's like being treated with respect, you know? It's like always a great job perk to be treated like a human. That's a job perk. This might be a little... But I have a family. That's why I need a job. So can I get like an extra like 5 cents a mile since you don't have to do that for me?
No.
I can go home, bro. I can go spend the holidays with them.
I get that. But this is a great way to contribute to the entire industry and make some good money and get some amazing benefits.
Benefits? Let's talk about that. What benefits?
So we got health, dental, vision. We have a 401k with a company match. And on top of that, we just have an amazing culture. And if you can serve fuel, we'll give you a bonus or at least enter you into a raffle for the potential to get a bonus.
Yeah, culture, you know, they have like bacteria, like they put in yogurt. Anyway, so that is the role play. So that kind of gives you the driver perspective of the way the drivers are talked to all the time, right? And the stuff that they, like, just the way the industry is positioned, it, that the driver, at fear of saying something too far out there, I mean, arguably, you know, through, like, fair safety, like, safety labor standards and all of that, you know, you don't have coal miners any longer being paid piecemeal pay. Like, nobody else is covered by that except for drivers. They're the most exploited workforce in America by proxy. It feels like a lot of this is stacked against the driver. It comes from the top, and then it goes down, but then the drivers are viewed as professionals. They're expected to do all of these things, except for when it comes time to talk about money or, you know, unions. While they got goofy, at least back then, drivers had collective bargaining. Now, there's no one really standing up for them. I mean, you can look at lobbyist groups. There's a lobby group that typically, you know, goes for the carriers, and there's one that typically goes for, you know, owner-operators. But the size of those two lobby groups, the difference is ridiculous.
So it is unique because there's a lot of things that are playing, a lot of different wheels that are turning that contribute to this overall experience. And whether you're a driver that's been doing it for years, heck, we just talked to one the other night and he did not realize that the game has changed. Someone came in overnight and they were playing chess and now all of a sudden they're back to playing checkers. It changes periodically. And depending on the generational driver that you're talking to, you can see the different stages of change by having a conversation.
What Charles is trying to say is the FMCSA budget, it keeps going up and keeps going up, but the number of actual fatalities doesn't really change, just more regulations. So the carrier perspective. So we just sounded like we totally trashed carriers. Carriers, despite all the stuff that we normally talk about, they're kind of victims of the market that's been created for them.
Everyone's a victim right now.
So 1980, when, you know, everything got deregulated and it went from basically like the government could say like, hey, you can go from this city to this city, but someone else is already there. They've already got enough. We don't need anybody to go there. Opens up free market, creates this like ultra competition that just gets ridiculous.
Well, there's a lot that went into that. And so at a carrier side, all these changes have been implemented, and then you got insurance companies dictating pace, you got lobbyists dictating pace, and the carriers don't have as much of a voice as a lot of drivers think they do. They try to do what they can with the hand they've been dealt.
Yeah, and then I mean at that point, then on top of that, you know, insurance companies, that's a big one. Talking about lobby groups, bigger than all the trucking lobbies is the insurance lobby group. Trucking is, you know, a lot of people look at these companies, they're like, oh, they're making so much money, but at the same time, overall in business, overall market in general, outside of the industry, trucking is actually really low margin. And then you toss out the fact that, yes, it is terrible that drivers are the only people unwrittenly that are guilty in all traffic situations until proven innocent. At the same time, those insurance deductibles are ridiculous. And when you're already operating, if you're doing well, you're typically operating at like 6% profit margin. And then all of a sudden you have to pay like $1 million deductible. Like, that's a hit. It's pretty insane the stuff that carriers have to look for as a business.
Well, there's even more to it. So carriers are in this unique spot right now where this power shift, almost like the freight index, right now carriers have the upper hand because most of them are at capacity. They're looking for these unicorns, you know, top-of-the-line drivers. You've seen drivers get turned away that have three jobs or more in 2 years, which is insane. I just saw a team get turned away. Their records didn't even get ran because they had more than three jobs in 2 years. Now, go back 2 years ago, and the team would have been paid top dollar for. So you got that happening. And then carriers have risen their standards, and they're going to be in an interesting position because you can always go up just like pay. But when you go down, you create this threshold. And when they go to lower it, which some of them will have to remain competitive, that whole gap in the middle That's a nuclear verdict waiting to happen. So some of them are going to find themselves in a precarious situation in the next year. And then some of them have done it the right way, but it's been painful for them. And with these carriers spending money, these recruiters, salaries, the marketing dollars, that's a lot. That's a big expense for a lot of carriers. They bring these drivers in, or so they think. They have 10 drivers scheduled for Monday orientation, and only 5 show up. They ate that loss. Those plane tickets aren't refundable. Those hotels were reserved. These drivers can help themselves as well by communicating. We're going to get into that a little later on. But the carriers have a lot going against them as well. And everyone thinks it's, you know, this day at the beach if you're a trucking company, and it's not. It's hard work. Both sides have struggles, and that's what we're going to cover today.
All right. So now all of this was to build to this moment. All right, the recruiter perspective. So you just put the carrier perspective together with the driver perspective, and they're on two completely other sides of each other. And there's this group of people who both sides, one views as an expense, and the other views as, like, the devil. But they're the middle people to try to glue these things together.
Yeah, so when you're talking about two different paths going two different ways, and you're the group in the middle, you're kind of left with going up a river with no paddle. So these recruiters have to collect information or are given information from ops, you know, people that don't talk to drivers or certainly shouldn't be recruiting drivers in a lot of cases. But as far as it goes to even a recruiter, these people are given this information. They're in charge of communicating it. And that's a tough spot because depending on your layout as a company and the communication being given to you, it might not be accurate and it might not depict the actual job. I know, spoiler alert. A lot of times recruiters are vilified over this and they're getting that information. They're getting that one sheeter. So recruiters actually have to go out there and do their own due diligence and figure out what the company actually has that's a win. And be able to have those hard conversations about where we don't win. Because listen, you're not going to check all the boxes. No one wins everywhere. But have those conversations. So the recruiters really have a tough job because when the trucks are full, they're not making that much money. And yet someone's asking them to perform miracles. And when the trucks are empty, get butts in the seat. And it's a race to the finish line. We've been doing the same thing. We talk about culture. We talk about pay. We talk about trucks. But no one wants to talk about the things that matter, like communication. And that's the recruiter's sole job.
It's crazy, you know, because you're trying to play both sides. Because at the same time, like, you have a company that you work for. That company pays you. You obviously want the company to do well because you have a living that you're trying to make, right? But also, you talk to drivers all day. Drivers are people. Like, they have personalities. You make friends with them. You meet so many cool people on the phone. And then a lot of times you get to meet them in person. It's awesome. And you want to be able to sleep at night knowing that you didn't drag somebody into a situation going to ruin their well-being. I guess really the whole thing is just, you know, like, give recruiters a break. But we are going to now put it all together. The show always comes down to two themes. It's either relationships or communication, which are both very similar. And how we can build the communication, the relationships between those three perspectives to help everybody have a better time and be more successful.
So when we're putting it all together, I mean, like Paul said, communication. To have a relationship, you have to be able to talk about it. And that means the good and the bad. So the number one thing everyone can do if you're a carrier is make sure all your departments are having those conversations and spending a day in each other's life, because the safety departments, the recruiting departments, the sales department, and certainly your dispatchers and ops need to know what it's like. One of the best things that I've ever implemented at a carrier is showing the cost. You want to get into people's heads, talk money. We're all here for money at some point. So when we're talking the money and the cost, show what an honest cost per hire is and make sure your ops people know that. That way they understand that, hey, the company can do better, have better margins, and that gives everyone more what they want down the line. But this is what it costs me when you don't actually coach that driver. Instead of just assuming that it's a bad driver, maybe spend a moment to find out what they're doing wrong and coach them, which is something that's lost its touch in this life. A lot of people are just a bad driver. Find me the next one. There's only so many drivers. Spend time coaching them. And the drivers come in. And one of the most unique moments I had was when I first got out of the truck and moved to the office. I sat in an orientation and I was doing my orientation. And part of that was sitting through it. And I'm hearing this driver say, I'm going to break in my dispatcher. All right. I'm like, all right, I've heard this before. I'm a better driver. And then I walk into the dispatch office. And I see this dispatcher that's about to be this driver's person that controls their pay and destiny in the company. I got to break in this driver. And I'm like, well, this seems dumb. You're both coming into this butting heads. But what if someone was humble enough to come into it and form a relationship? Get to know what drives that driver. Why are they showing up to work today? What's important to them? And then, hey, I'm the driver. What if I got to know my dispatcher since this person does control my pay and I'm paid cents per mile? Let's talk. And sometimes if you do that, you're going to form a relationship and it's going to be beneficial for the entire company. So those two things are indicative of success and they all start with talking.
There's inevitable things that you can't really beat. So one thing that I always talk about all the time, and I always rant about, even my Twitter handle is pay your drivers. But it was interesting, you know, because obviously I think drivers should be paid more. Like, you should be paid for everything. You should be, I mean, like, you would pay a security guard at minimum wage to watch a $1 million load hanging out in a parking lot overnight, like parked in a shady area. Like, why does the driver not get paid for their 10 when they're responsible for the well-being of that load? That's silly to me. But at the same time, you know, a good example is I actually talked to an owner of a medium-sized company, and I was like, hey, man, you spend this much money on marketing a month. Like, why not just pay your drivers to help with retention? And he made the point that to pay all of his drivers a penny more per mile, he would end up spending dramatically more than what he's spending on advertising and dealing with the turnover. Also, he's like, 1 cent isn't going to make a difference for me. I'm going to need to raise that at least 25. And while that sucks, that's indicative of the industry that we've created over the past few decades. So it's just one of those things. There's a give and take and just a lot of stuff that sucks.
Some people think that they have the solution. You hear a lot of drivers talk about, hey, a salary or a set daily pay. Carriers have tried this. This was an insane experiment that I was firsthand witness to. One of my clients tried to implement a salary per week, and I thought it was a pretty competitive salary for a company driver. It was $1,700 a week, guaranteed. As long as you worked 5 days, this is what you got. So it was our company's job to communicate this offer. So we're giving it out to the drivers, and I kept hearing, well, that just means they're going to work me like a government mule. I don't trust that. Where's the cents per mile? So here's this party that everyone was trying to accommodate. You know, our audience in this offer was the drivers. Here's your pay. Communicating that and it not being received the way that people expected. There's a communication breakdown between drivers and companies. People think they know what they want, and they're forming all these meetings. And trust me, trucking has a lot of meetings.
So many, man.
It's death by meetings. And then there's meetings to recap the meetings. But they spent all this time designing this, and it epically failed, and they reverted back to cents per mile. Now, there's drivers out here that are like, well, that's insane. Talk to your other drivers. See what they're being offered. You'll find out that these options are being presented and tested. They're just falling flat on their face because the communication's not happening. The trust is broken between drivers and carriers. And that needs to be fixed before we can make any progress as an industry.
The community as a whole is kind of broken too. You know, like my favorite thing is when I talk to these people, you know, that have been driving forever, and they're like, oh, yeah, we used to get together. If you saw someone broke down the side of the road, you'd go help them. You know, like people would talk. But at the same time, especially with social media and people relying on that, you don't have to find a community on the road because you have a community on your phone. But in doing that, there's no real community being built. There's a lot of, you know, just people that aren't really coming together and unifying. And I think the most important thing you could do is talk to people who are in your industry, talk to people around you, whether you're a driver, it's another driver, or a dispatcher. If you're a dispatcher or a recruiter, go get in a truck. Not just, like, get in one. Like, go ride in one for 48 hours. You could read, like, seriously, like, you know, it's like I use the swimming analogy. You could read books about swimming. You could watch videos on how to swim. But if I throw you in the deep end and you've never been there before, you're going to have a bad time. You know, so you can know everything about trucking. And then, but the second you get in that truck, like, probably 2 hours in, you're going to be like, oh my God, this is not what I thought it was. I'm just saying communication and empathy is key. And that's the only way our industry is ultimately ever going to get better.
I grew up in truck. I used to ride with my dad. We'd be driving down the road. And as a kid, it annoyed me. Every time a driver would be broken down, he'd pull over and offer help. That doesn't happen no more. They keep going. You got to hope they don't run you over. They very rarely even move. And it's a law. And then drivers have formed a community to trauma bond.
Right. But then you also have other situations like recruiters. So many people are focused on call time. Make friends. Because that's who they want to work for. They want to work for people they know that actually care.
So recruiting's actually switching that up a little bit. You're starting to see that. So when I entered recruiting, it would make 120 plus calls a day. Didn't matter if you got anything but a voicemail. You were just dialing for donuts. But some of the most successful recruiting departments are getting away from that, and they're focused on call length. And why is that important? Because metrics do matter. I don't care what you say. Metrics have to be in place. Someone has to be able to measure success. So call time. Well, if I'm talking to you for 4 minutes or more, that means we have to have a conversation. If we're having a conversation, we're going to get to the nitty-gritty and hopefully form a relationship. Now, the content of that conversation matters, but something you got to start somewhere. So you're starting to see that get measured, which is cool. I really love it when I walk into a recruiting department. They're like, yeah, we focus on call time. I'm like, oh, so you actually want your recruiters to talk to your driver. This is amazing. You're also seeing some recruiting departments get away from paying bonuses per hire, which is really impressive.
Mm-hmm.
That means, one, you got to pay your recruiters a good amount of money just to show up, because it's like asking someone out for a high school dance. They get told no more than they're ever told yes. Constantly rejected.
I think some people get yes for the first time. I think that might just be an us thing, man.
Well, exactly.
At the high school dances.
And then you're seeing driver, like the successful recruiting departments, they're actually working on retention. And sometimes without even being told, they want to maintain that relationship. And that driver, that recruiter was the first human element of the recruiting funnel. That's the first person. Before that driver ever heard about the company, you had to buy into the individual. And then you heard about the company. If that individual did not do their job well, are you going to continue to have that conversation? I've hung up on a recruiter. I used to mess with them and call them just to say, hey, what's your guaranteed pay that I'm going to make more? And then laugh as I'm driving down the road. This stuff that has to get better. We as an industry have to be better.
Also, stop saying the same stuff. If we've been friends for more than 5 minutes, you've heard all three of these things. And I think you even said one of them earlier. You know, like, stop saying, like, we're going to treat you with respect. That's not a job perk. They're people. Secondly, like, stop saying you're a name, not a truck number, because 9 times out of 10, companies, when you call in, yes, you're a name, not a number, but your truck has one, and that's how we're going to refer to you for the majority of your tenure. Own that. Lastly, you know, the family thing. We talked about that earlier. Like, sure, that's a great way to have culture, but at the same time, if you're recruiting somebody, if you're employing a driver, their goal is to improve their lives. Like, sure, they need to make you money because you're the company, but like, their goal is to improve their lives. When you say, we're going to treat you like family, typically what that ends up meaning is like, their existence is about you, you know. But also, you'll go say the drivers are the backbone of the industry. They're the lifeblood of America. They're the hero. Let them be that, especially if you're not going to pay them better, right? At least give them that. So we also are going to go over some tips and tricks on how to navigate these relationships.
And we've said it. They're people. You're dealing with real people that have expectations, they have families, and they depend on us to do this right. The drivers depend on you to communicate the offer. The recruiters and companies are depending on you to ask the right questions. Be your own advocate. If you're a driver in this audience, you need to ask questions. And don't be scared of the answers. And if you don't like the job,
don't see
it coming. And then not show up. We actually had a great conversation. One of our dear friends had their driver in attendance at Matt's, and we were talking about this very thing. And the gentleman's like, well, if I don't like the job, I'll just bounce to a new job. I'm like, you get three times. He's like, I get as many as I want. I have clean driving record. I'm like, they'll never run it. It doesn't matter. You think it matters. It doesn't. Your MVR won't even get looked at. 3 jobs in 2 years is the standard in most carriers in this market. And it's, you know, traumatizing as that might sound, drivers need to be their own advocate right now. The best advice I can give you is to look at yourself and your expectations and find a carrier that matches those. Do your due diligence. Go on Google. You're already on Twitter. Hey, Google, check out the reviews. Talk to other drivers. I know, foreign concept, communication. Talk to other drivers and ask. Go into your forums. Do your research. Ask around. Be your own advocate. No one else is going to look out for you better than yourself. And if you're a carrier, be prepared to have those tough conversations. One of our best friends gave the best saying ever, and we use it all the time, but don't be scared to look at your baby and say it's ugly. You're not going to win everywhere. You might win here, and that's great. Let's talk about it. But let's identify where you don't win and have those conversations, because if you can get those out on the forefront, now you're recruiting with intent of retention. Now you're helping the drivers actually be part of your organization. Have those conversations about your culture. What do you guys stand behind? Those things matter. Pay, trucks. You got new trucks. New to who? Everyone has new trucks. Maintenance per mile is in play. It's not a perk anymore. People think it is, and they look great on the photo, especially if you're not using European photo stock.
Refrigerators, microwaves, and an APU does not necessarily necessitate great equipment.
These things matter, and you have to be honest with yourself and do an inventory of your offer and where you actually win and where you don't, and connect those dots. The best way to make a relationship is to solve a problem. Identify that driver's problems and connect the dots to where you can solve them. And if you can't, don't be scared to say, this isn't a good relationship. Let's move on. You're doing yourself and them a favor because they have livelihoods and families that depend on you.
Having made a lot of videos for trucking companies, that's what I did for years. Trucking companies, because of what they do by proxy, you know, you might have different types of loads that you haul, different types of freight. But ultimately, trucking companies basically all essentially do, in essence, pretty similar, pretty much the same thing in some form or fashion. It is important to put out what makes you different. But one thing I find with companies and carriers a lot is that they think they know what makes them different. They know what their intent was when they started this company, when they set this up. But that's not always the case. It's not always the end user. Like I said, I had this big research paper-esque thing that I wrote out, and Charles was like, I love it, but you know who's not going to love it?
You will.
All of you.
Trust me, I did.
So that being said, the best thing you can do as a carrier, if you do want to display that, talk to your drivers. The thing that I used to always do is I would go interview drivers of this company, make sure nobody from the company is around, because then they're just going to give the right answer.
CEO there.
Right. But ask, like, out of everywhere you've worked, you know, especially if they have experience, like, hey, you've got 10 years experience, you've got a great safety record, you could go work anywhere, why do you work here? You ask about 6 or 7 drivers that, you're going to at least start to see reoccurring themes. And regardless how you feel about your company, what you think is cool about your company, whatever that like median answer is, that's what makes your company awesome and different from everybody else.
And they never align. The recruiters out here, which you guys do this, how many times you talk to a driver and they tell you, hey, this is what they want. And by the time you get through a conversation of a couple jobs and why they left, you find out what they wanted isn't actually what they stated. You know, we all joke in recruiting about that. A driver that calls is like, hey, I want to make $2,000 a week and be home daily. And it's like, well, those things are on opposite ends. The more you're home, the less you make. The more you make, the less you're home. So let's have that conversation. What's more important? And it sucks that we have to have this conversation, trust me. But it's trucking. Again, we're all trauma bonding here. But at the same point, it's important to have that conversation. I can't tell you how many times people have given up on a driver that they were recruiting and this come back to a conversation later and all of a sudden the stars have aligned. Nothing else changed. The offer didn't magically change overnight. The conversation changed. You started setting proper expectations. The driver had expectations. The carrier has expectations. You merge them together, have that conversation, and you find success.
All right. Well, that being said,
thank you for all they do.
Yeah. I mean, the whole thing, and the cool part about, you know, like, we're not just speakers. We run a podcast. And without people who listen and the people support us, we couldn't do this. You guys are the best.
Everyone knows that we don't like to get all spiffed up. We're down to earth guys, but I feel like when I'm in company like this, it's a black tie affair.
Well, and you know, I think this setup, you know, between the truck and the red carpet, I think that's a great expectation of what companies say their orientation like is like versus what it is actually like.
Except here, you get what someone promised you. These are some sweet looking trucks. Well, it's been a great day at Matt's, and it's time to wind down and get out of here. So thanks for tuning in to Cents Per Mile. I'm your host, Charles Gracie.
And I'm your co-host, Paul Gibson. See you next time.